Hello and welcome to WNHH Radio's Dateline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make the Elm City tick. Darnell Goldson and Ed Joyner make New Haven tick. They are the elected members of the Board of Education. Welcome to the WNHH studio, gentlemen. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
And we also should give thanks to the Yale New Haven Hospital for providing support to today's program. So, gentlemen, you asked actually to come on the air, and I'm honored that you made the time, because recently we had a Mayor Monday program in which Mayor Tony Harp and I were reflecting on whether whether having elected members of the Board of Education was helping or hurting the process of education. I'm going to throw it to you in a second. Just got to ask our station manager something. All right, so who wants to hit it first? I think, Darnell, you hit me first. So the criticism is that it's politicized education. So in 2013, we began having elections for Board of Ed. You two ran unopposed. You're the members of the board, and you won the popular votes, city divided in half for each district. And, okay, you know, if you could turn your phone off, that'll
turn
help.
Turn it off.
Okay, sorry. So the criticism is that once it got all Democratic, it got messy. That we had fights all the time, political agendas, rather than focus on doing education. The other point of view was that, and the reason we went to a partly elected Board of Ed, it's not even fully elected, it's not even majority elected. It's mostly appointed by the mayor, approved by the Board of Alders, but then you have these two elected members plus a non-voting student member who I think should be voting. That's just my editorial comment. So the other argument was that when the mayor used to appoint the Board of Ed, they never talked about anything or held anyone accountable or scrutiny. So yeah, you didn't fight, but you also had pretty big problems in the schools that weren't being addressed. So we were saying that in a representative democracy, you get to vote for your mayor every 2 years, you vote for your alder every 2 years, so you hold them accountable if other appointees aren't doing well, so you don't need to elect every appointee. So what was your feedback on that, Darnell?
Well, first I'd like to make a few corrections. We didn't run unopposed.
You didn't run unopposed?
No, there's a three-part process to running for this position. First, you have to get the nomination by...
Let's get in the mic. Yeah.
You have to get the nomination by your party. Both of us, I believe, had opponents to our nominations.
But they didn't end up making it to a primary or anything.
Right.
Mine did.
Oh, yours did?
I ran against a Republican.
Right.
Who never showed up.
Well, yeah.
But he still had an opponent.
We had a team of detectives and bloodhounds looking for your opponent. We couldn't find
right,
him anyway.
I would argue that some of the Republicans in Congress haven't shown up either.
So they showed up because of havoc, but which is democracy. You know, first of all, the majority of the boards of education in Connecticut are elected boards.
We're all but two in the entire state.
And 100 towns.
And they seem to work fairly well. The other argument I would make is that our board hasn't had elected members for many, many years, and I haven't seen much progress in terms of the achievement gap for African American boys and girls and Latino boys and girls.
It was just how the schools ran. I mean, I think we can make it a given that there was not much scrutiny.
There was not much scrutiny, and there wasn't much democracy, quite frankly. If you have to depend on one person for your participation in the process, and that person has total control.
Does that mean, do you think we should be electing the building official appointed by the mayor? Should we be electing the economic development administrator? Should we be electing the zoning board? Should we have elections? We have a lot of boards and commissions, fire commission, police commission. Should these all be elected positions?
The Board of Education is nearly half of the city budget. I think we certainly should
so
have.
So it says a special place.
I believe it is. The state has determined it is.
And you're also saying, Ed Joyner, that we're outliers. Because we're still outliers, right?
We have 90% of the boards in this state are elected.
Fully elected.
Fully elected.
And we're still minority elected.
Right. And I think it's unfair to say that the problem on the board is elected official, because there's not just two, there's three of us. The mayor was elected. The mayor. And Donnell and I were elected.
Do you think the mayor should be on the Board of Ed?
Yes.
Why?
I'm going to answer that as well.
I think because, you know, most
if you guys keep agreeing, we're going to give up a democracy.
Well, we didn't agree on this yet.
Well, first of all, we go way back. So
yeah.
Don't.
he was my teacher giving me spankings in school.
Right.
But I do believe that's how old we are. Mm. But I do believe that the mayor should be represented on the board. Absolutely. I mean, most people make her responsible, or he responsible for education in the city, so they should have voice there.
So let me disagree.
Yeah, I'm with that, Joyner. Before even hearing about it,
I think the mayor should be on the board, but I don't think she should be able to appoint anyone to the board. Mm. I think it should be an all-elected board. Secondly, the mayor is not responsible for education in this city.
It's a state chartered organization.
Right.
But voters still hold the mayor responsible.
Well, some do. I mean, the bottom line is that the people responsible for education in this city really are the teacher and the student.
Mm-hmm.
The student has to work hard. The teacher has to teach well.
But who holds them accountable?
Well, the state does, legally. Right. So I don't know how anybody could be a leader and not believe that the law is
important. Well, one argument for having the mayor then appoint at least some members is that, yes, half the budget, right, comes from the state, but half comes from the city.
Mm-hmm. And if the mayor appoints members to the board, she's going to be held responsible for the board.
Right.
But there should be a criteria and a standard for members of the board.
See, the reason I think, so I have a third of you.
That's really
important. I don't see why the mayor should sit on any board. The mayor makes appointments to the board, so you're saying the mayor shouldn't make appointments to this one, mm-hmm. and is held accountable for votes of that. But if the mayor gets involved in the day-to-day decision-making of boards that are supposed to operate with some autonomy, I think there's a problem of having a chief executive too much in the weeds of everything.
It is. It raises the specter of patronism. It raises the specter of.
But you also don't want your CEO on committees.
You don't. Absolutely not.
Well, you know, it would be. I think that would be the case if you had a board that was totally run by and responsible to the city. But the Board of Education is a unique animal. It's actually chartered by the state. So of course I believe the mayor's inclusion was exactly because of that, because it was a state organization. The mayor wanted to have some voice at that process.
Well, let's brush up on our Latin a little bit. De jure and de facto in this city, de jure, certainly we are a creature of the state, but de facto, if the mayor can appoint people, particularly people who have limited background in education, if the mayor can do that, then de facto the board becomes her board.
Except for the interregnum when you have a switch of mayors. So the mayor didn't get control of this board until a couple of years after her tenure.
And really the quality and knowledge base of people on any committee determines how well that committee functions.
Mm-hmm. And you're hearing about that from Ed Joyner and Darnell Goldson, the two elected members of the New Haven Board of Education here on Dateline New Haven at WNHH, your home for community radio, 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhaven10.org. So a year ago, you two were one of you challenged the other to a duel at this famous Board of Ed meeting, and there was pandemonium in the hall, and you apologized after Ed. But that was a symbol. That was the coming to a head years of conflict on this board since we went to an elected board. We went from a board that slept through years of decision-making and never held anyone accountable, to a board that had so much infighting that meetings were going on for hours with harsh things said to people, and you had to have retreats that were like marriage therapy sessions.
Well, they weren't marriage therapy sessions. We had retreats, but the bottom line is that there were some, since we're using marriage as a metaphor, irreconcilable differences between various members of the board. Darnell and I didn't have any major conflict until the superintendent search.
When we got it now, so because of the elected board, the former superintendent was pushed out of the job. There was a feeling he wasn't doing the job.
It's not because of the elected board.
No.
There were several appointed members. I mean, there were right, you built more than a majority of members.
But when you had a board that was asleep and unelected, it never questioned a superintendent whether should be there. Right?
That's
good, Darnell. I'm saying that's a fact.
But my point is it may not have been so much because of the members, but because of who the superintendent was.
Reggie Mayo
was a strong superintendent that got along well with his staff, mm-hmm. got along well with political factions in the city, and was able to maneuver through that, and also had a good relationship with the state.
Board of Education. Not only that, he was a teacher, a director, a department head, a principal.
Well, no one understood how the city worked better than Reggie Mayo.
Absolutely. And he understands how education works.
And also, you know you're not to cross them because there are consequences.
Well, the same.
You don't mess with Reggie, you do mess with Reggie.
The other good thing about Dr. Mayo is that Dr. Mayo could walk in any house in this city and be respected because people realize the great contribution he had made to children as a teacher, as an assistant principal, as a principal, and what have you. And our previous superintendent graduated from Stanford Law School with no teaching experience, no principal experience.
I always learned something.
And he was and he was hired by an appointed board.
Yeah. So you're saying that the irreconcilable differences grew from the search for the successor, which was a really messy search.
It
went on for a long time, a lot of fighting. A lot of people who were strong contenders said they didn't want to come to New Haven because of the politics of the Board of Ed.
And others did want to
go. Absolutely.
And would the argument, Darnell, be that we don't want someone who doesn't want to deal with what they call politics, but what you might be calling holding someone accountable?
I've lived all over the country, and I've been involved in politics since I was out of high school. And I got to tell you, New Haven is as tough as any city out there when it comes to politics. And if you cannot manage that process, then you're not going to be able to manage being.
So you're saying it might be a good thing, given that if the Board of Ed didn't have elected members and didn't hold the superintendent accountable, are you worried that a superintendent would be lured here or then not be ready to deal with all the politics?
You have to go through the fire. We have a 30-member Board of Aldermen. We have a large state delegation. We have a lot of town committee people out there who are very involved. Yes, I think that anyone that can't go through a hiring process certainly is not going to be ready for serving on this
board. And Darnell, if you wouldn't mind going close to the mic.
Paul, I would argue that.
Making Ed sound more authoritative. He's got a deeper voice, but then he's right there on the mic.
I would argue that compared to some of the cities I've worked in, New Haven is a cream puff.
Really?
I've worked in 29 states. I've worked with ministers of education in a number of countries in Europe and Caribbean and what have you. And I've been in situations where a city in the Midwest where a white board member threatened to hit a black female board member with a Coke bottle.
Well,
I've been in situations where two board members in Brooklyn got in a fight and they both had to be taken to the hospital in the same emergency wagon.
So all you guys did was like an 18th century line.
I have been physically accosted in the parking lot by a preacher, no less. When we were working,
I thought he was laying hands on you, Darnell. I didn't think he was accosting you. I thought he was laying hands on you.
He bumped me.
But what would happen when you lay hands if you got a missive from upstairs that isn't so kind?
This
city is as tough as any other.
You got to go to Dallas. Coke bottle's pretty serious.
So what about that, though? If someone looks at the city and says, okay, two members of the board are having this, in the end, you weren't really going to have a duel. But, that you had this thread.
I wasn't sure about that.
You know darn well. If your parents were alive, and I know your sisters and brothers can attest to the fact that I love you like a son.
We're still talking about having a duel as a fundraiser.
Yeah, but it's a dance contest.
But I get to choose the weapon because I was challenged.
It's a dance contest. Is that we'll have a dance contest.
Well, I'll lose that, so we have to do something.
Well, or we can have a singing contest.
I'll definitely lose that. Next.
let me give you an example of how this debate plays out every time. So last night there was a committee meeting of the Board of Ed about giving out some contracts, right? And they involved Integrated Wellness Group, which has gotten contracts for many years with social-emotional learning. This was about a vets program about which people raised some serious questions. And some parents had questions they felt weren't being answered. So it got sent back, so you guys were deliberated a little longer. And then the second revelation that, in fact, the people leading that group were taking over the New Haven Family Alliance. I don't know if you saw that.
That is not a revelation. It is not even true at this point. I know that they're in negotiations
We called the board member last night who said the person's been running the meetings.
Who's been what?
Been the chair. Of that board said the new chair is the person from Integrated Wellness.
And Integrated Wellness person says she's not the chair of that group.
Okay. Well, in any case, the negotiations there.
You know what, Paul? I don't even know why we're having a conversation because we don't have librarians in schools. Ugh. We don't have paraprofessionals. We don't have enough secretaries.
So that's budget. I do want to talk about part of the question budget is how we spend money.
Absolutely. We should not be spending money on anything but that which is essential to the children in the school district.
But you're a big believer. Ed Joyner, one of your claims to fame, you've had many years, you and Darnell have many years of accomplishments in civic service in the city, and yours includes working for the Comer Method organization.
I was the executive director of the school.
That's right. You went around the country talking about that. So the kind of work you were talking about in these contracts is front and center of the Comer Method, that we're saying you can't have people learning in schools if we don't have social-emotional learning.
Right, and in the districts I worked in, that work was done by professional educators and professional service providers. We can't let the board be a patronage bin in this city.
Is that what was happening last night?
I think that's what's been happening for a while. personally. We don't have any competitive bidding for these contracts. In some cases, people are providing services using third-party subcontractors. We don't have any evidence that any of these programs have worked because there's no evaluation attached to them. And if you want to talk about the Coma work and what we've done across the country, the great majority of that work was done by professional educators.
So is your issue that these contracts should happen, but they should happen on a bid basis with people with a better background and more results showing?
First of all, you got to have a needs assessment to see whether or not you need these people beyond your professional paid staff. Secondly, you should look to your paid staff first. I know that when I was a principal, some of the after school programs, we hired teachers, and teachers that were affected with the kids that we were trying to reach. They already know them, they know their parents and what have you. And instead of bringing in people
from, so are you going to vote no on these
cards? Well, absolutely, I'm going to vote no.
Yeah. Well,
Darnell, I would counter that
Our administration and our superintendent has made those recommendations to us. They are the paid professionals that we should be supporting, and they say they need these services for our children, and I want to support them in that.
I would also say
that there were several non-bid contracts that were passed that evening that not a question was asked about.
We passed a contract for Comer.
Yeah. With a no-bid contract. We passed a contract for ACES.
Let me respond.
But there were results given.
They did. Those other organizations.
And so has this group that we're discussing from last night. They actually gave a 45-minute presentation at our last meeting, a PowerPoint presentation with all of their evaluation.
So why are they being questioned unlike the others?
I'd like to ask Darnell a question.
But before you get this, Darnell Goldson was the one last night who said. The person asking from the group, I don't like to single out people because it's about the person. The person said, I don't feel I should be answering any of these questions, how much we pay people. And it was Darnell who supported the contract, who said to the person,
okay, go ahead.
This is public money, and we should be able to ask questions.
Good for Darnell.
Not only should we be able to ask questions, but we should get answers to questions before we approve those contracts. And I don't think that the person was concerned about providing information that she has. She was concerned about providing the information of those individual employees that she was hiring. Unfortunately for her.
She didn't want to say Joe's making X dollars. That's correct.
Was that the question? I wasn't there.
Yes, that was the question. The question was, I was told that
I couldn't comment at a finance meeting.
Why is
no,
that?
He wasn't.
Well, I was told that. It's in the minutes. Mr. Cotto said to me when I asked the question at the first meeting I attended, he said, Mr. Jonah, you can't speak.
Then
he got an opinion, and then I'm not going to attend unless I can speak. I got other things to do with my time. And then he got an opinion from Mr. Golson, who sort of supported the fact that I couldn't come to a committee.
That is not true.
I can show you the emails.
That is absolutely not true.
At least
what I said was the chairman is responsible for running his meetings, and he could determine who participates and who doesn't.
And of
that's
course,
what I said.
And of course, he interpreted that as, Dr. Jones, you can't speak. So
and he was wrong. And he was wrong to make that interpretation.
I wish you had told him that.
I did.
If you had, I would have gone to meetings.
Because Darnell, now here's the thing: that guy, Jamel Cotto, was actually appointed by the mayor.
Right.
A political appointment, a lot less experience than you two have in meetings. Darnell was on the board of aldermen for many years, and he was an alder who showed up at meetings he wasn't a committee of and asked those questions. So you're saying that Jamel Cotto didn't understand that happened.
Well, he told me I couldn't speak, so I didn't go to the meetings. Why would I do that? I could be writing policy to deal with procurement.
The chairman has the right to make sure that his meeting is running smoothly.
Well, he's not the chair.
What does smoothly
Frank
mean?
Frank Medente is the chair of that committee.
He felt that...
Let me correct you.
I'm not going to speak for Jamel.
No, you're right. Didn't Darnell just make the argument that people make when they don't like an elected board of ed?
Yeah.
You said he should be able to have them decide what it means to have a meeting run smoothly, which can mean don't ask questions. Your whole argument for an elected board of ed is we need people who will ask questions because the old people didn't.
No, I don't think the issue was around asking questions. I think the issue was around who was participating and how they're participating.
Actually, the question I asked was about procurement.
And quite frankly, I'm not going to get into a discussion about that meeting and about how he ran it.
Okay, but in case you're going to vote no, how are you going to vote on this?
How am I going to vote on what?
The contracts that were up last night for the vets.
I'm going to vote to move forward all of those no-bid contracts.
And Paul,
including ACES, including Kohler,
let me tell you,
including all of the other groups that the superintendent has asked us, has recommended to us to move forward on.
Paul, let me tell you why I'm going to vote no. First of all, we have been doing this right for a long time. If you think about what the state says about professional services contracts, what national organizations say about professional services contracts, there's a standard that you follow. There's a protocol and a process you follow. The first thing you have to do is determine whether or not you need the service and whether or not the service that you're asking for is a duplication of services.
They have determined that?
Can I finish, my dear brother, whom I love dearly? So we didn't do any of that. And by the way, the state is just as complicit, because when our prior was the Commissioner of Education, there were a lot of no-bid contracts that the state awarded. And the state was also, certain people in the state were steering turnaround schools to adopt certain programs. I can prove that, too. I have emails to prove that. Now, what we've done is that we've taken public funds and we've allowed people that haven't necessarily bid for them in an open competition, have not demonstrated their credentials, and I want to say that ACES, Comer, and Clifford Beers it's a false equivalency to compare them to a group of people who got together.
That's convenient.
No, it's not.
That's convenient.
And I'll.
If you let me finish.
I'll tell you why it's a false equivalency. First of all, Clifford Beers has been in business for 100 years, over 100 years. It is the first outpatient mental health clinic in America.
So is that how we determined
the
how
Comer? Was the sole source. I would argue that's the sole source provider.
Oh my goodness.
The Comer program was evaluated by the U.S. Office of Education and proven to be the only school reform program in America that got academic gains and social emotional gains.
I'm not questioning this.
ACES is a creation of the state legislation. In July 1st, 1972, the state decreed that they would have regional educational agencies that would provide services to clusters of schools.
Wow.
Let me finish. ACES is legally authorized to provide services to the schools in the region. New Haven is one of them. So comparing those three to a very young organization that has no scientifically randomized studies to indicate that they're effective is really a false equivalency, and I rest my case.
All right, now we talk to the senator from Connecticut, Ronald Nelson.
Yeah, look, the fact is that we're either going to be fair and do it the same way for everybody, or don't do it at all. Okay, the fact is, Comer has a lot of experience out there. They have a lot of accolades.
They've been evaluated.
ACES, and so has Integrated Wellness, and not only that, but she's an award-winning author.
I'm an award-winning author.
Now I'm still a prop. Can I talk?
I'm sorry.
Thank you,
Tasha. I'm not doing this.
But Paul, the fact is, we should be fair to everybody. This organization apparently has been vetted by this administration. They felt comfortable that she could do the work. She's done the work previously and has gotten accolades from this administration.
So your argument is that if the professional staff of the Board of Ed does the vetting, that's vetting and evaluating. Ed, your point seems to be
that's argument.
If outside,
Ed makes every week.
Outside groups of expertise, like a government, an independent body. So that's the difference of opinion. I think that's called democracy.
It is.
So
but there's more scientific evidence on my side in terms of sole source status. And also, if Mr. Golson wants to do everything that the professionals asked him to do, I would hope that he would extend that to the superintendent from this day on. Whatever she recommends, he should support it.
Right. Isn't the point of like the board that, you know, just support everything the staff
absolutely
says?
Absolutely not. I mean, that why would we have a board if we did that?
So your argument was that the reason you're voting for it is because she said it.
No, I'm saying that the main thing is that she made the recommendation. I vetted her recommendation. I looked at the facts. I asked the questions. And then I, along with a majority of board members, will make a decision, yes or no.
She recommended a talent officer for the district as well.
Yeah, she has. Well, she.
I hope you would support that.
I haven't seen the recommendation yet.
When she does make
the recommendation, I'll make a decision based on the case that she makes.
So there was an article about this morning. I hope everyone felt it was a fair article. I thought it was, by Christopher Peek, about what happened last night.
No, it wasn't a fair article.
But oh, which part was unfair?
Go ahead.
No, it matters.
No, ask questions and I'll tell you what that
was. No, I'm going to move to something else.
I don't have it in front of me, so.
Okay.
I think it was a fair article. In fact,
you weren't even there.
No, I think it was a fair article. Because, first of all, everything he said can be substantiated. Secondly, he probably is the second coming of Bob Woodward.
That's true. But he also didn't take a stand. If you read that article,
just wrote the article.
There were both sides.
That's fair.
But in any case, that's not the point. The point is I want to make sure you had a chance to weigh in.
Okay. I read it. I just haven't. I skimmed over it on the way here. So.
Okay. But I guess here are the two things people said about it on the Independent site. Paul Wessel said, all this kind of makes you yearn for the days when the Board of Education was appointed entirely by the mayor and you had someone to hold accountable for the dysfunction. Reverend Samuel T. Ross Lee responded, Paul Wessel, engaging conversation about matters and clearing up confusion before one's vote for or against them is not dysfunction. It's called democracy.
It sure is. It's
messy. Safe to say that this is something Ed Joyner and Darnell, who are now on Dateline New Haven and WNHH-FM, your home for community radio, 103.5 FM, livestreamed at independent.org.
Great parenthetical.
It's fair to say that the discussion we just had for 15 minutes is an example
absolutely.
Of why you two believe we should have an elected board.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We got agreement, guys.
Listen, Darnell is one of the brightest kids at Hill House, and a person who leaves his job often to come back and work in the city. He loves the city. I love the city. I love him, and especially his wife and his daughter and his sisters and brothers. And
vice versa.
And no one can accuse him of not studying the issue. We don't agree on everything. I think he's wrong about the contracting, but. We still care about each other. We talk a lot.
All right. So now, one thing you guys are talking a lot about, and the city's talking a lot about, is a structural deficit at the Board of Education. These are hard times for government. It's interesting. We've had the longest, we're 1 year away from the longest post-recession recovery in the history of the country. Obviously, it's been an uneven recovery, and it hasn't been good for state governments and local governments. I would argue that that's partly because of long-term decisions that were deferred about pensions, but also... There's an anti-tax movement in this country that started with Proposition, I forget, was 13 in California with Howard Jarvis, that now just means that people don't believe in paying taxes for government. But in any case, you got this mess. Mm-hmm. You're an elected Board of Ed. Darnell, you're the president. And right now, we're not really going to get enough money to do what we've been doing. So you've had to do this deliberative, and I would argue it's been a very deliberative and careful and positive process when you've tried to figure out how to cut a whole lot of money. I think it was originally $19 million.
It's over 20.
Yeah, and how to cut that without cutting instruction for students and while still trying to do the stuff we care about, like social-emotional learning. We're still, close to $9 million away from solving that structural deficit, correct? So what are we going to do?
I'm going to keep struggling with it and keep cutting away and finding ways to get around it and just pray a lot, too. I got to tell you. it's not easy. Try to make these decisions. You know, closing those three schools last year was.
Why are we closing more?
We want to. I don't say we want to. We have to. And I believe we're probably going to close at least two more schools.
But yet we just opened another one.
Well,
Obama.
No, we just opened the Montessori school.
We didn't open
Montessori. You voted for it.
I voted against it.
Oh, okay.
And I love the school, but. You know, there are things that my family couldn't do when I was growing up because we didn't have the money.
We didn't just open Montessori. Montessori's been open for at least 3 years.
We extended it.
And by the way, if those kids don't go to Montessori, they're coming back to our schools.
Right.
We're still paying for them one way or the other.
No, we're not paying for them in the same way.
Well, but when you close other schools, you still have the students, but you're saying absolutely. You can close the overhead.
Yes.
Those other schools cost us overhead because those were our schools. Those were our buildings
that we had to maintain. Charter people complain they don't get as much money as other students
well,
get.
Well, let me get back to the point. The bottom
this is
line
thing.
Is
this democracy. This is what we're talking about.
When you're in a hole, you need to stop digging. And we have a $9 million deficit, and the board has tied the superintendent's hands in terms of doing some of the things that she feels might be effective.
Like hiring more $165,000 employees.
No,
but you know that's not digging a hole.
No,
what is?
You know what? Let me give you a good example. When the superintendent told them that she would have to start to eliminate the deficit by cutting non-unionized employees first, and that meant part-time people, not all of them, but some of them. She told the board that, and then they had a press conference.
She fired 400 people that don't even work for us.
And then well, that's not her fault that we didn't have a database that would tell us.
Now, do you guys realize they've switched positions now, which is legitimate because when you're talking about issues, mm-hmm. they're complicated.
Right.
Now, Ed is arguing on the point that you got to let the superintendent do her job.
Absolutely.
Darnell is saying we got to watch because sometimes she did it wrong and how she went about it.
Try to help her.
But on the other hand, on the contracting issue, Ed was arguing that just because she said we should hire someone doesn't mean we shouldn't, and you said she did the good vetting.
Right.
She said she did.
So I'm saying to him, be consistent. She asked for a talent.
He's saying to me, be consistent.
I was just pointing out that you both.
I know. She asked for a talent person, which is critical because that's the gatekeeper for everything that comes in the system, whether we retain people and what have you. And every district, every urban district has a.
She hasn't made that recommendation to us yet.
So I'm hoping that when she does make the recommendation, Darnell, you'll vote for it.
Well, you know, I will make my vote based on the information that we receive and how it affects our budget. And the fact of the matter is, $165,000 talent director doesn't educate children. And I know that it's important to have it.
The talent director is a person responsible for recruiting, retaining, providing professional development, dealing with labor disputes. And if you don't have a good one, you can actually lose money because you end up
and you could say that about a lot of administrative positions. Right. And by the way, guys, I honestly, deep in my heart, I'm not on either person's side here.
Uh-huh.
So what's interesting to me about this discussion is everyone always says the way we're going to stop spending so much on education, which is often like just saying I want to pay taxes, cut the fat administration. It becomes like a jihad.
Uh-huh.
And I think we always can, but I've never heard anyone identify more than one or two positions. Like a city hall, they say cut the mayor's driver. Which would be, you know, 0.001% of the budget, which is fine if you think you shouldn't have it, but it's symbolic. With administrators, almost every position, I'm not saying every, but almost, and of course you can always reevaluate when years go by because times change who you need to do what job, but almost every position you can make a case for.
Well,
and when we're talking about structural deficits, we have to decide what, because every so many jobs you could say we lose money by not putting that money up front,
right.
But other times you say, but we just don't have the money to hire them, like you're saying about the Montessori
Paul, here's
school.
The point, though. When you're making cuts, you have to first look for redundancies. And there are some redundancies in our system. The second thing...
What would be examples?
Well, we have three bilingual supervisors.
That your superintendent recommended.
When we should have one, and we should put the rest of that money into teachers for those children.
You should have that conversation with the superintendent.
You need more soldiers and less generals in this case.
You know, if I were Carol Brooks, the superintendent, now for listening to this, every 5 minutes, my head be going like a tennis match. I'm saying, wait, who's the guy on my side, and who's the guy gives me a hard time?
I'm on the kid's side.
I took a vow when I became a teacher to be kids. It's like the
kids
the
first.
So you're saying there are redundancies. And Eric James wrote in, thank you for listening. This should have been sanctioned by the New Haven Athletics Department. He means the debate. What I love about it is you guys are doing it in a good spirit.
Well,
you know?
A lot of people don't
like, I love you, bang.
It's like Wilder and Tyson Fury the other night.
Right.
A lot of people don't realize that Darnell and I spend a lot of time together outside of board.
Yes.
But these are great issues. So you're saying, Ed, that in general, you have to, that there are some redundancies, but I think you're both agreeing that sometimes you just can't afford positions you think you might like to have, even if they're good. With the very interesting proposal by Ed to have two of the ESL, I guess the ELL supervisors become teachers, but you're still not
going
to save
not have them become teachers. The cost savings should be redeployed to get teachers in front of those children.
Right, so you're not saving money. That's not helping you do
$9
million
deficit.
What's going to cut? Can you really, because I'll admit I'm skeptical of this. I'm skeptical that you can eliminate a $9 million deficit by, quote, cutting the administrators. I'm not skeptical that you find
the bottom line is we don't have enough money.
But you also have to, like, you have to write reports to government. You have to hire people. You have
to
discipline people. You have to write curriculum. Those are administrator jobs,
Absolutely.
And then everyone gets mad if, like, you're not on top of it if there's a problem at a school, right?
Absolutely.
So where is this $9 million going to come from? So, Darnell, you talk about cutting schools. How much do you save when you cut a school? You're still paying
close to $2 million
per school.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we just cut 4.5 schools?
Yeah. I don't know if we could get to 4.5 schools with the number of kids
that
we have.
We're
building a new school, Obama, right? The Obama school is going to have the ability to house, I think, 500 and some odd kids. We have two schools now. And they only have, I think, less than 200, around 200 kids in that school right now. So you could close at least one of the schools and have those kids populate that school and still have a little bit of room. So a lot of people complain about us building the school.
But I hear a lot about, and I don't think we should pick. I think we'd agree on this. Let's not pick on saying close the school for not performing well. That's that kind of.
I don't think
thing.
I said that.
No, you didn't. No, you didn't. I'm saying didn't. I want to put that. You didn't. I'm saying let's put that aside for the point I'm about to make. If we're talking about closed schools, we're not talking about what test scores are or something, because that doesn't really mean what you should have where. You know, that's a different whole issue. But I hear a lot about West Rock Magnet School, not about how it's performing, but that it doesn't have a lot of people there. What are we doing with that extra building? Just what Darnell's talking about, when you have 200 students at a school, do we have extra capacity enough at other places to absorb them and save that $2 million
per school? I think you got to look into that. I think you have to look at what the occupancy rate is for schools, and if a school has X number of seats available.
So you just mentioned the Obama school with 200 students from Morris.
That's not the entire calculus.
It's not. It's
because
not.
If you look at West Rock is doing good, well, academically. And so
could you have those same people just move into another school space?
I think you have to try to find a way to keep that, keep that environment, and they have the riders while moving it somewhere else. Yeah. Absolutely.
So do you think, would you two agree that we could close a couple schools and have that deficit?
I'm not ready to say that yet.
Because no matter what school you cut, you're gonna get a fuscelade of opposition. No one likes to have a school cut. And you're elected Board of Ed members, so
you got to get reelected. But you know what? At the end of the day, we still have to do the right thing.
Absolutely. Any other school? So you brought up one, Morrow Sheridan, which has a beautiful building that could probably be sold for condos one-time revenue.
I didn't bring up Morrow Sheridan.
Oh, where would the 200 students come from?
He mentioned West Rock.
Oh, no, but you were talking about the Obama school. Where are they coming from?
They're coming from Morrow. They're moving over to Obama.
So that was a good example.
I think one way to think about it, let's say you had 10 hotels, and one hotel was fully, full occupancy, and then you had several hotels that had 50.
Right, you're saying combine them and have fewer buildings.
Right, so you have to do that. But see, one of the things that is both a blessing and a curse is the magnet program.
I know that's been really reexamined.
It's problematic because, I mean, historically we have never addressed the aftermath of Brown in a way, particularly
fascinates me in the last year, and you guys are at the front line of this, is that we had a school, Hyde, that there were a lot of good reasons to close.
Right.
Creed was renamed, but it was created, I believe, from Jefferson O'Neill, the desegregation loss of decision, saying we're going to have magnet schools that are regional to have greater racial balance. But then what happened in the end was that because African Americans from neighboring suburbs wanted to go, we actually limited the opportunities of Black and Hispanic students because we said we need more white kids to reach the goal of this lawsuit.
That's the problem.
That was crazy.
But Paul, think about nuts. Think about it. It is 2018. We're still still talking about 1960s.
And they had that in Hampton too. They're closing schools in Black neighborhoods.
If you know the history of desegregation movement, it has always been about the implicit assumption that in all schools to be good, you have to have white kids in them.
Yes.
Right, and you have to be sitting next to someone.
Now, I went to a historically Black school, and I can count among my classmates people with PhDs in physics, biochemistry.
Right, this has been at the basis of debate for a long time. People come back and say, but the money follows the color, unfortunately.
Well, the state has to rethink that.
But the way to fix that is to so you're saying don't racially desegregate schools.
I think it's more class-related than it is race.
I think it's a combination, but here's the problem. How are you going to hold schools responsible for people leaving cities?
Yeah, so housing underlines
it. The burden for desegregation has basically been on the backs of Black people. If you go back to the
right, they have to leave their neighborhood. Creed.
Absolutely.
Black and Latino students end up not getting opportunities that were created in the name.
Absolutely.
But that just shows the unintended consequences of complex policy.
Absolutely.
But do we still want racial? Do we care about desegregation?
I don't think that policy is so complex. I mean, they basically made it black and white. And the most interesting thing is so fascinating to me is
there's a class issue.
What's even more fascinating to me is that they basically have said in their regulations that a white kid who has any Black blood in them is no longer white.
Right.
Louisiana. Was it the 164?
It's like the 60s.
The problem with trying to solve complex problems where we end up doing more harm and repeating some of the underlying prejudice.
You have to be more creative.
And if you want to use blood as an example, then everybody's an African. I mean, I don't.
Yeah. So you know, some of us believe the solution is.
I mean, we were getting cited for not reaching our demographic goals in there because white kids could not classify themselves as white because they may have had a Hispanic parent or a black parent.
This is also crazy because Hispanic.
But Donnell, think about all white districts that no sanctions at all.
You know, they don't have to desegregate. Well, they don't get the state money, so they don't get sanctions.
Some people think the only solution is to have neighborhood-based schools that are all good.
I agree.
Enough resources.
I like neighborhood schools.
I agree.
But
I
like they have to be good.
Well, the school is
they have to get the money. They
the school
have the
is
standards.
A reflection of the families that attend them, and that can be overcompensated for when you have strong leaders in those schools. Because if you look at the literature on effective schools for poor children.
Yeah, how are you feeling these days about Booker T? Is that doing the job? They started out pretty strong there. It's a school with mostly African-American, large, low, and working-class income.
I do know that there's a great leader at that school.
There is a great leader at that school.
He's a hard worker. He's a great guy. He puts a lot of time
in. He defies the stereotypes.
Absolutely.
That charter bashes.
And that has been the narrative of every school in this country's history that has taught.
So school leadership is important.
It's very important.
But also, numbers went up and down.
The question is it doing well?
And how do we decide if it's doing well? Because, you know, I'm a skeptic of school test scores.
How do you decide?
I am too, Paul.
And do charters have a place in our school system?
What's your answer?
I know my answer is yes.
My answer is yes,
they have a place.
My answer is that charters should be in the school district based on the original intent of charters.
Which is having them be small with a lot of teacher-driven policy to innovate.
No. They were supposed to be innovation sites for the largest
system. Right, created by the...
So, like laboratories. In fact,
The American Federation Teacher.
Al Shanker.
So that was teacher-driven.
It was teacher-driven, but as it evolved, it wasn't just teacher-driven. It was that they were supposed to do education innovations and serve as laboratories for the largest system. And I happened to work with Al Shanker, did a book with him at Hebrew Union College. So that's what Al wanted. I mean, it was teacher-driven.
And now his union is one of the biggest opponents of charter schools. Well, they feel that the hedge funds have gotten behind
it. And it's not all charters, though. I'm against charters that exact an administrative fee and above the award that they get.
But this is the issue of teachers unions.
I think teachers should have a union in a charter.
Because some people argue that teachers unions have been in the way of
New Haven
has defied that narrative.
Teachers union. I've worked all over the country. Teachers unions have been part of the solution, not part of the problem.
What do you think, Darnell?
I think unions are important for workers.
And what about charters?
Absolutely.
Do you agree with that?
I think that charters should be,
three
should be involved. In any public institution.
You have three. You have one elementary, one middle, and one high school charter in any district of our size, and use them the way they were intended. And they should stop running around thinking.
We have more than three charters.
They're better. I know we do. That's probably more too many than
three. Now, by the way, Wintergreen School might be closing in Hampton. Might not, but they're going to have to at least move. Mm-hmm. There are 100 New Haven students there. Are we ready to bring them into our school system? We will be.
We'd be glad to take them back.
I assume the superintendent will have us ready.
All right.
Give us your tired, your poor, your helpless.
And that's an interest. That's also an interest. You know, this whole magnet program has been a boon for the suburbs because, you know, when we talked about last year, or 2 years ago, we talked about doing an extra fee for those students to attend. Not only did they oppose it, but there was actually a quote in the newspaper from the West Haven superintendent who basically said, if we had to take all our kids back, we'll have to build a new school.
Absolutely.
That was a Faustian bargain we made. Paul, we got money up front from the state to build those schools in return for, in perpetuity, keeping the slots open for suburbanites.
Here's another problem.
I don't have a problem with the slots being open for suburbanites, but they should pay a higher.
But then,
should look into whether or not we get a disproportionate number of special ed kids from the suburbs. Because
we provide special ed.
This is actually anecdotal, but I've talked to a lot of parents who live in suburban communities, and the reason they have their kids in New Haven schools is because they're special need kids.
Yeah,
and we have a phenomenal leader in that, Tiffany Jackson, and we do a good job with those kids, and many of those kids don't get that type of support.
But it really dries up our deficit.
There you go.
Black children make up 38% of the student body. They are roughly 1.64 times more likely to be suspended than the average student. It's much higher for boys, almost 10 to 1, I believe, if I remember correctly. Why is that happening? Is that something that should be addressed? And if so, how?
First, those are the questions that we're asking.
Well, I like to opine on that. First of all, I think it rests on a historical foundation of the historical mistreatment of black people. And I think it's reflected in all of our institutions. Anytime a black man could be shot simply by living in his own apartment, that's a problem. And as a pro-Semitic African-American, anytime people can be worshiping in a synagogue in Pittsburgh and be murdered simply because of their religious...
Or a church in Charleston.
A church in Charleston, then that's a problem. So there's a pecking order in this country with certain people at the very bottom that have been historically mistreated. Native Americans are at the very bottom. And if you look at the arc of history, African-Americans, Jews, Latinos, Native Americans have been at the bottom of the social pecking order. And the real problem with a lot of us that come from those groups is internalized oppression, that sometimes even black people look at black children differently.
We do suspect.
And we have to change
it. It is amazing I did not get suspended for being a white kid in schools.
We do suspect that there may be some structural issues related to that, but we don't know yet. So we've asked for more information.
And Tamika MacArthur writes in, "Hey, guys. Yes, I love neighborhood schools, too."
I want to say this, too, though. Any person of color that's running a school where the kids are, you should take care of all your kids. But I would think that if a black male is running or a Latino male is running a school, they should have a special consideration for all children, but especially those kids, because they should know what it's like. It's almost like the scripture in Exodus when the Jews are told, "Do not vex or oppress a stranger, for you were once strangers in Egypt." And as an African-American male, when I was a principal at Hill House, when I was at assistant principal at Hill House, principal at Jackie Robinson, I made sure all my kids were taken care of, but I spent a lot of extra time with those young men. And I think that part of it has to do with people who work in our schools understanding that it is not just a profession, it's a calling.
But we're seeing a positive trend in those numbers. If you look at those suspensions numbers, you'll see that we're having more in-school suspensions this year than we had last year. So they're moving towards trying to eliminate out-of-school suspension as much as possible. There are some schools that don't even have any suspension at all now.
Right.
We want to emulate that, of course, as much as we can. But, you know, someone said to me, there's some real kids out there that really need to have more discipline. And we can't ignore the fact that there are kids that are coming, and I said this, I forgot who I said it to, but these kids weren't born to be bad, and they weren't born to be suspended. So we have to find a way to change what's causing them to be in that position, to have those issues, because it's not just a structural issue. There are also, I mean, these kids are coming from homes, and I know when I went to school, if I got in trouble, there's no way I got suspended because if I did, I got home and I got an extra punishment that was much worse than being suspended. I don't know if these kids are getting that kind
of
discipline.
Plus, Ed Joyner was spanking your butt at Hill House.
Oh, all the way home.
This is really important, too.
Wish I could have gotten a video.
All of this is not on teachers. There are young people in our schools who are old enough to know the difference between right and wrong. And the school that I attended held, once you reach a certain age, it also held you accountable. So it's not just enough to say all these kids have been suspended. We need to look at it on a case-by-case basis.
Yes.
Darnell can relate to this. When he was in high school, there was a young man that used to bully him. You know what I'm talking about.
No, I put that memory out of my head.
You know, all right? Now, if I suspended the kid, that same kid tried to attack me with a weapon. Same kid that bullied him. Now, if that kid got expelled, whose fault would that be? Mine, Darnell, or the kid?
Should you expel the kid, or what should you do?
If somebody's trying to stab you or shoot you, they should be expelled.
In that
kid's case, a lot of things happened, but I won't go into that.
I'll give you another example. When I was in the third or fourth grade, I used to walk to school every day. And these two kids used to rob me every day for my money. And I could have went the other way, but for some reason, you know, your 6 or 7 year old mind just doesn't think that. And I just kept going the same way. They just kept robbing me. Finally, I told my mother about it, and she told the school. They convened a meeting between me and my parents, them and their parents. They brought a police officer in to scare the kids straight, not to arrest them, just to scare them straight. Not only did those kids never rob me again, but we became good friends.
Right.
today we are still good friends.
I got beat up by some guy in elementary school, and I complained. And then when I got to junior high, he was waiting for me. He started beating me up again because he said, you told on me.
But today, those kids,
you were a snitch.
But today, those seven-year-olds would have been arrested. Yeah. They would have been put in the system because there's no tolerance. There's no they don't think outside the box. They just say, punish them. We have to find a way to make these kids, to work with these kids so that they're not punished, but instead are taught. That's what we do. We teach, right?
Right, right. And in the case of the kid that bullied Darnell and tried to hurt me, he's doing very well now. His daughter attended college. He gave me a great big hug at the last homecoming game. He came up here from down south. And that was because we reached out to him. We found out that he was the way he was because his father had left the home. There was no male figure there. And he's very angry about that, and he took it out on other people. There's no saying that hurt people hurt people.
Right.
And so I think it's incumbent on every principal to find out who the kids are in their schools that are likely to be problems and to bring those kids into their circle, to work with them, to meet with them, and to help them overcome some
Which is exactly challenges. The work that Integrated Wellness is doing right now.
I don't necessarily agree with that. I think it's the work that we should train our principals and teachers to do. I have nothing against Integrated Wellness.
I can't tell you how much I enjoyed this.
I enjoyed you, Paul.
You guys are great.
Right.
Now, I love hearing how you can respectfully disagree.
Right. Absolutely.
And we did have a duel, just there were no rapists.
We haven't had it yet.
No, we haven't.
Oh, here.
It was a verbal duel. It was a verbal duel. And I just want the record to say that I love Darnell dearly. We often have meals together.
Yes.
We have his sisters and brothers are like my family.
Our wives can't stay away from each other.
Right. And his wife and his daughter are people that are very dear to me. So,
all right, guys. Well, thanks a lot. I hope you'll come back.
Absolutely.
And thanks, Paul, for all the work you do.
Eric James said every kid needs a mentor and a person in the building who cares about them and works with them outside of academic work.
Amen.
Well, thanks.
Hallelujah.
Thanks for joining us. Thanks for comments, folks. Thanks to Yellow Haven Hospital for providing support for today's program. And thanks to today's guest, elected Board of Education members Darnell Goldson and Ed Joyner. We're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free from the group CD, A Plea for Peace. Now we know what it's like to be free. We just got to remember to book our flight. Fly free with us all day and all night long here at WNHH, New Haven's home for community radio.